This is, in some sense, a descent into real. This is the real world, and it's the real, real world. There are 140-something million Americans living in the Eastern time zone, and there probably were not more than a few dozen who voted after 17 minutes, 59 seconds after midnight on Wednesday morning. Whoever that person was in Kiel's precinct, I owe a beer to. That's 5 hours and a quarter plus standing in line. Polls closed at 7. There were 29 votes after midnight. We had long lines in Richland County. Charles Stewart's analysis put South Carolina fourth longest at an average of 28 minutes. But I've seen almost nothing that points out the fact that Richland County, we had 7 hour waits. We had routine 5 hour waits. It was not a pleasant day all across the county. Richland County is literally dead center. It's the home of Columbia, which was invented after the Revolution to be literally dead center in the state as the state capital. It's where the University of South Carolina is. 244,000 registered voters, second largest only to Greenville County, almost identical in size to Charleston County, like within 1,000 registered voters of Charleston County. 121,335 votes cast in precincts. There were all but 129 of those made it to the certified count. There were two machines that they failed to figure out had votes in them and didn't count. In November 2010, we had a hotly contested off-year election, but the gubernatorial race was open with no incumbent and very hotly contested, and they used 800 DREs, and I presented some of the analysis of that in 2011 at this conference. 7 in the morning, November 2012, we had only 550 Ivotronic DREs that were up and running. So it was a mess. By Thursday, there was a local judge who declared that all the election data needed to be sent to the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division to be counted there. The next day, the state Supreme Court said, no, that judge didn't have jurisdiction to make that ruling. There was a Supreme Court hearing Tuesday, and then they sent the data back Tuesday evening to be counted. So everything got schlepped down to state law enforcement and then sent back. Results were announced Thursday the 15th. There was a legislative delegation hearing on Monday the 26th. I had been calling people saying, look, if you can get me the data, I can tell you what happened. I can't tell you why, but I can tell you what. On my way home Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I happened to check my email on my phone, and the guy from State Election Commission said, I have just emailed you the zip file of the election data. So I thought, great, and I got home at about 4:50 the day before Thanksgiving to find that the university emailer had stripped away the zip file. So I had to turn around and drive back to headquarters and call them and say, look, if I get there, will you give me a CD? And I did, so I was able to work Thanksgiving. I did my initial analysis by noon Friday, sent it to various people, talked with one of the delegation members. When the delegation hearing was going on, they were asking the election director and the chair of the election commission questions like, how many machines did we have? And they were saying, I don't know. And I would text 630 to Representative Smith. How many PEBs? I don't know. And I would text 468 to the delegation. We had a sales tax referendum that failed in 2010. There were all kinds of conspiracy theories and a lawsuit saying that the affluent precincts that had voted against the sales tax in 2010 were shortchanged machines so as to suppress the vote. This is exactly backwards from the rest of the analysis around the country that shows that minority voters had longer lines than white voters in the US. And the politics continues. The final report that Steve Hamm delivered was not done until July 27th. When he delivered his final report, and my disclaimer is, Hamm contacted me and paid me with a personal check for a modest number of hours at my standard university rate, hourly rate, to my salary amortized by the hour as if this were an NSF grant. So I wasn't making expert witness rates by any means on this. I was putting in a fair bit of time, and I did not mind being paid for it, but I was not charging $500, $600, $800 an hour. There was no evidence at all that there was anything other than a colossal screw-up. The election director had been put in, had never run a big election. The previous election director had been in office about 40 years, and one of the reasons he didn't get the job was, I think, because I found out they hadn't counted all the votes in 2010. We don't have early voting. That's an obscenity in the state of South Carolina to one of the two political parties. Absentee voting was, in fact, substantially African-American. I drove by because I was a poll watcher at one place, and I was going to vote absentee, and the lines for absentee voting were two blocks long for days and days and days, and all the faces were black. There are something like 17 excuses. So from my way of thinking, having voted absentee other places, there are lots of good excuses. I did vote absentee once that says, you know, if you are caring for a sick person, you can vote absentee. And my mother was literally in the hospital, and I didn't know if she was going to make it. So I said, I checked that and felt I could have a clean conscience that said, you know, if I have to disappear to Louisiana, I want to have voted. So there are a number of excuses. It's reasonably lenient, but it's not no excuse, no. You do have to say that you have a reason. Now, we had 121,000 total votes in precincts. There are also a number of votes at county headquarters that were provisional and the people whose registrations were screwed up. And I didn't worry about those because those are people who will normally take longer anyway, because if they weren't at county headquarters, they would have voted in the precincts. 12% of all votes in Richland County were late after closing time. 14,000 some votes. Two-thirds of all of the votes after closing in the entire state were in Richland County. So when Charles Stewart's study says 28 minutes average time to vote based on his study, there's going to be a huge skew between the rest of the state and Richland County. Charleston County, by comparison, voted 140,000 votes in precincts. They only had 1,200 votes, more or less. Charleston County can't seem to find all their data, so we don't have all. They couldn't find all their data in 2010 either. So there's a history of this. There's a longitudinal study says that they don't know what they're doing. Greenville County, in contrast, voted 171,000 votes, and they only had 403 votes that were after closing. So one of the things I have told people is, you want to know how to run an election, go talk to Conway Belangia in Greenville County, because he got something right that Richland absolutely messed up completely. So the question is, how long did voters actually wait? And why is Greenville and Richland such a different experience? I mean, how did they get more votes per DRE, and essentially no late votes? That's less than 0.5%. Richland had only slightly fewer votes per DRE, and it was a disaster. There's an example, November 2010, okay, we had 1,888 votes in the hour after closing. That's not too bad. You're going to have some lines. It'll take a little while to drain the queue. But 2012, we had something like 14,000. The exact number is really difficult because the timestamps in the DREs don't really say anything. So we had machines voting in 2014 and 2015, and we had machines voting on daylight time that weren't supposed to be on daylight time. So you have to kind of back out a few of these, but this is a small number of hundreds out of 14,700 something. So I don't believe it really skews the statistics enough at the level that I'm going to be talking about. One advantage, we vote entirely on paperless, Ivotronic, ESNS, Ivotronic DREs. South Carolina declares all of the data to be public records. So we have the entire cast vote record for the whole state. We have all of the event logs from every DRE in the state as public record. It's supposed to be on the website of the South Carolina Election Commission. It isn't yet, but if you type in the URLs, it's there. They just haven't put it on the page. Yes? For everything. There's a long story here. They kept saying they had no reason to do audits, and then we demonstrated how bad things were being done, and they suddenly said, oh, we have to do this, it's a wonderful idea, we're glad we thought of it. And fine, things have gotten better, so it's fine. But we can actually tell what happened. If we were voting on paper, we wouldn't have data like this. If we were voting on anything other than a computer, we wouldn't have data like this. But we actually know timestamps of when all these votes were cast, or most of them, except for the things. We have the 30A and the 45 results files. Those are the summaries that get printed. The data is ugly and has to be taken with a certain amount of skepticism. We don't get all the event messages. We don't get an event message that says the machine has been opened to receive a vote. We get a message that says at this time a vote was cast. So during the day, if there is slack time, the time between cast votes will include idle time, which is bad. After closing, we assume that the queue is full, and if there was any idle time, they'd close the precinct. So those times ought to be at least valid for walking up, having the election person open the machine, doing the vote, and then hitting the button. So those numbers actually should be reasonably correct. Now, during the day, they can be skewed because of idle time. After closing, perhaps people are tired. Maybe by past midnight, whoever votes is taking a little longer because they've been standing in line 5 hours. We actually have times before and after closing, and it's not all consistent. We have times after closing that are average shorter times than times before closing. One of the first things to do was to compute time between cast vote. How long were people taking to vote? South Carolina law nominally says you get 3 minutes. So that's the benchmark. Maryland apparently says 5, according to Edelstein's paper. We can histogram the votes collected by 15-minute intervals. We can histogram the votes collected in every DRE. We can look at these. One of the things that I have done is to go through, in the precincts that I have selectively analyzed, I've gone through every DRE to see when they were casting votes, and if there's a precinct and you've got 4 machines that are collecting 5 or 6 votes every 15 minutes, and one that's collecting 1 every 15 minutes, probably that one is misbehaving and the poll workers are trying not to use it. But we don't get messages from computers that say, I'm sorry, I'm dead. You know, that's like the turn power on button on a computer. There isn't a turn power on instruction in the instruction set. Right? So we don't get messages saying they're dead. We get indications that they're misbehaving because we get event messages like they've got to calibrate a zillion times or it's not connecting to the PEB or things like that. And we can look at that, we can look at the histogram, we can look at the rest of the precinct, and most of the time we can say, well, we don't really have all of the machines functioning effectively. So there's the histogram of the logs of the time to votes of the 14,700 something late votes. And it's basically a normal distribution with a heaviness to the right. I haven't done too much to try to figure out whether I can get a good normal distribution. I'm not sure that the kind of statistics I'm doing warrant that kind of deep analysis, because I think that's probably in the third and fourth decimal place. It's not in the main term.
It sure looks like a normal distribution.
It is normal, except it's darker red to the right. Now, is that simply because, you know, we have 101 seconds and 103 seconds, but not 102. So if I binned differently, it would look even. Or is there actually more data to the right? That's hard. That could be done, but I'm actually not convinced that there's a reason to go that far down.
It's probably close enough if you wanted to fit it in the normal distribution.
Yeah.
What's the significance of log normal?
The log normal, if you look at the actual time to vote, it's not symmetric right to left. It rises more steeply on the left and then has a longer tail to the right. So there are more longer times than there are shorter times. Now, again, a caveat, I simply trimmed away all time to vote numbers that were more than 15 minutes on the basis that probably is something other than a voter standing in the booth for 15 minutes. We have one machine that had the last vote was like 12:20 in the afternoon, and then for some reason they started using it again at 8 o'clock in the evening, and it picked up a few votes. That interval is clearly not somebody standing in the polling place. So I trimmed away some of the data. My graduate student on another project has a master's in statistics, and we've had long conversations about how much is legit to massage the data. And he was erring on the side of not massaging anything more than you had to. So I tried not to do that. But there are some long times. And I mean, the longest time to vote was actually several hours, but that's clearly bogus. So I did some trimming at 15 minutes. Edelstein's earlier paper had a distribution of the percent of total votes per hour, but that was a 13-hour Maryland day, so I adjusted for a 12-hour South Carolina day with roughly the same distributions. I'm going to simulate this. I know how many votes were cast in a given precinct. I can take those percentages. That's per hour. I do a Poisson interarrival time of voters. I sample the log normal time to vote in order to assign to each voter coming in a time to vote. And now I've got a queue of voters, and I can just run the simulation as a standard discrete event simulation. And I can gather, I can use statistics for before closing times, after closing times, countywide times. They don't matter a whole lot. And I chose the 14 worst precincts in Richland County, a random 14 best precincts, and then all of Greenville. The 14 worst, I took the 10 precincts with the highest number of late votes and the 10 precincts with the highest percentage of late votes, and that turned out to be 12 total precincts. And then I threw in the two precincts that I had actually firsthand knowledge of, the one where I spent 5.5 hours as a poll watcher and the one where I spent 2 hours and 31 minutes in line voting. And wandering, since I was there with my wife, I was wandering up and down talking to all my friends about how many hours they'd been in line. And the random 14 best, there were about 40 precincts, about a third of the precincts that had fewer than one late vote per voting machine. And I figured one late vote per voting machine is not unexpected. So I just literally generated random numbers. And I do know how to do that, and chose 14 of the 40 as places that didn't have late votes. And then I ran it against all of Greenville County, which has essentially three precincts that had late votes. Edelstein's argument from 3 years ago says you look at 12-hour voting time and divide by 3 minutes per vote, then the maximum capacity in 12 hours of one of these machines under state law would be 240 votes. And you should not go over half this capacity if you want to maintain, your numbers were less than 1%, less than 15 minutes in line. Richland had 192 votes per DRE. Greenville County had 200 votes per DRE. So they were way over this, and it shows when you look at the times to wait. I could run the simulation, and I did run the simulation for each precinct in the 28 different precincts for the number of physical machines they had, and then smaller and smaller and smaller number of machines until I got something like the same number of late votes that actually happened. So that's the sensitivity analysis. I did not try in the simulation to have fractional pieces of voting machines. I stuck with integer number of voting machines. And then that gives me a simulation number that says, based on these parameters in the simulation, it looks as if this precinct should have had, say, 4 working terminals all through the 12-hour period to come up with the same number of simulated late votes as actual late votes. And then I go back personally myself with my own eyeballs to the EL-152 records and the histograms to try to determine, you know, they may have had 6 voting machines delivered, but they may only have had 4 that actually worked. And you can determine some of that if they opened late, they weren't there for the whole 12 hours. If they got closed early, they weren't there for the whole 12 hours. If they were flaky in between with no votes being collected, and other machines in that precinct collecting votes, probably they were misbehaving. And most of the time, you go to the 152 record, and you'll see in that time period, suddenly the machine is saying, my screen isn't calibrated, my screen isn't calibrated, my screen isn't calibrated. And then they stop using it for a couple of hours. And so I computed what I call the estimated effective terminal count of how many do I believe, based on the, looking at the specifics of the data, were actually in operation. There were all kinds of reports of broken terminals of various kinds. Some of those I think we can justify. So I simulated, I simulated by numbers of voting machines trying to match up with the number of late votes, and then I would compare that against the effective number that I would compute by actually looking manually at what the record was. And if I do that, then I can go back, and if those numbers match up, if what I think is the effective number of terminals in operation matches up with the number of late votes in simulation for that number of terminals, then the wait times from simulation ought to be reasonably correct. For the late vote precincts, 10 of the 14 precincts match up with either the before or the after times. Two match up with the before but not after. There's only one really anomalous precinct. So you get lots of data. Precinct 324, for example, had three terminals delivered, but if you look at the record, there were really only two that were working. So it's really only 2 times 12 hours of terminal time available for voting, not 3 times 12 hours of terminal time. Mean time to vote in that precinct before closing was 2.944 minutes. Mean time after was 2.797 minutes. So that's less than the 3-minute limit. Deviations. The simulated number of late votes somewhere between the 2 and the 3 line, somewhere between 203 and 450, plus or minus deviation. The actual number of late votes was 309. So this would argue that the simulation suggests that, in fact, there was something between 2 and 3 working terminals in that precinct. If that's the case, the mean queue time somewhere between 132 minutes and 364 minutes. So that's 2 hours and 12 minutes to 6 hours. Well, this is what Richland County was like all day long. One of my colleagues just got naturalized from Iran and voted for the first time. Said it cost him $150 in babysitting fees to vote. And one of the other colleagues from a different department took his son, who was in my class, and spent 5 hours in line, with Nick Widener's first voting experience being standing 5 hours in line to get to vote. There's this Edelstein capacity quotient. We were coming really, really close. We were on the wrong side of a horrible line. The other thing to learn from this table is that when things start going bad, they can go bad very quickly. At 6 machines using the aftertimes for precinct 380, 32 late votes for 6 machines is 5 per machine, is about a 15-minute delay after closing. Not bad. You drop that to 5 machines and suddenly that skyrockets to 270 late votes. When things start going bad in these queuing models, they go bad very, very quickly. So it's important to be on the safe side of this precipice or you're going to be in deep trouble. Some of the other precincts, 336 was Keel's precinct. This is the one where the votes were cast after midnight. And they actually had a very long vote time, 5 minutes. I have not done any of the political science about demographics. That's not my expertise. I can do numbers. I'll leave the political science to the political scientists. And then if you look at the precincts with no late votes, the numbers also match up in some sense almost perfectly. I mean, there's the confidence level is very high here. 14 precincts, actual late votes. One precinct had 5, which is like 1 per machine. That precinct, that one doesn't match up so well. The 3.4, you can go in and the machine was not opened until late and then it was shut down early, so it was not working for 6/10 of 12 hours. But the simulations actually come very close and the queue times look a whole lot better. The mean queue time is looking, for most of these places, more like 20, 25 minutes. Still not within the 15-minute limit by any stretch of the imagination. But the maximum queue time is an hour and a half or so, for the most part. So at the 95% confidence level, in the sense that the actual vote is between 1.96 of the deviations of the mean, Greenville County shows this works perfectly. Richland County, it's a little, there are a couple of things. Half of the late votes in Greenville were in three specific precincts. And those are the precincts that don't look so great in simulation, but everybody else just finished fine. And the only one that is the outlier, it's more late votes, but they had like eight voting machines, and it was really only two or three late votes per voting machine. So again, that just says it's a big precinct with a lot of resources, and the count of actual number of late votes is not necessarily the right count. Now, even with few late votes, they still had 36,000 people. They had a fifth of their people waiting in line more than an hour, if the simulation is correct. But they had no simulation times where the mean time was more than 2 hours. On the other hand, we had almost half of the county taking more than an hour, 44%. And this is conservatively meaning that I have backed off and taken the intersection of all the possible ways of counting queue times. I looked at the shortest possible queue times to be viewed as the times people spent in line. We had 20,000 voters, 17%, more than 2 hours in line. And even in the good precincts, the 14 precincts that had no late votes, a fourth of those voters were in line more than an hour. So the July 27th headline from the newspaper said, next time in Richland, voting in less than an hour. Since 2000, I have never voted in Richland in less than 90 minutes in a biennial election. I mean, to me, it has always been an ordeal. It just happened to be a bigger ordeal than normal last November. I mean, I usually allocate 2.5 hours for voting when I go to vote. I just make sure I got to have the whole morning free. And that's never happened to me. I voted in person in Annapolis, Maryland, and in Ohio and Louisiana. I've never had that experience. I've never had more than 15 minutes. I've never had less than 90 in Richland. Now, one of the reasons people always bring up for long lines is the complexity of the ballot. And one of the questions is, how did Greenville survive and Richland not? So I did go back. One of the things I can get from the cast vote record is all the ballot styles, all the contests. I can sort down on all of that. It's not as nice as you would like it to be, because the ESNS system does something computationally that, you know, our undergraduates would do once and then decide was an absolutely horrible idea and never do again. They do not do a horizontal encoding of ballot styles. So ballot style 3 could be a different ballot style depending on which machine and which precinct. So I can't look at ballot style numbers. I actually have to generate the ballot styles and do a comparison of those ballot styles against each other to determine that they're different. But it's on the order of 150 ballot styles in the county. We had 6.53 on average contested ballots and 6.5 uncontested. One of the advantages for long lines of having highly gerrymandered districts for racial, political, partisanship, and socioeconomic scale, which in the Deep South are synonymous, is that the districts are gerrymandered and very often there's nobody else running by the time you get to the general election. There was no competition, for example, for my congressperson. There were a number of precincts in Richland County where the undervote was larger than the vote for the incumbent. And Greenville had two fewer things on the ballot, almost two fewer things on the ballot. So maybe their time to vote was smaller simply because they had fewer choices to make. Again, this is the sort of thing I would leave to the political scientists, because they do analyze this kind of thing in detail, and it could be analyzed in detail. The flip side, and I think the real story of why things worked in Greenville and not in Richland, is that they were literally just above the threshold of disaster and managed to escape, and we were substantially below. If you just count the number of votes times the length of time it took to vote, these are the two times before and after, we would have needed in Richland 533 DREs for 12 hours at the smaller time, 608 at the larger time. We never had more than 578 machines collecting votes. So if in fact it was a 217-second average time, there's no way we could have finished in 12 hours, period, even with perfect distribution. You know, none of this page breakage into precincts and individual machines and whatever that makes things worse. Greenville was just barely on the other side of this. They would have needed 752 to 784, depending on which number you count. And they actually had, except for 90 minutes during the late afternoon, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock-ish, which would have, I suppose, been the idle time, they had more than 810 machines collecting votes all through the day. And that puts them just barely on the right side of having enough total resource. And you go back to the table, once you start having not enough resource, things go bad very quickly. So I think this is the only reason they survived. Nominally, we are supposed to have one machine for every 250 voters. For Richland, that would have required almost 1,000 machines in operation. We don't have that many machines. You can't buy them except refurbished. The county council voted not to buy any new machines after November 12th, or November, and we're going to be voting on these machines at least until November 2016. I will quit and take questions. There's all kinds of background information in case people have questions.
Thanks, Duncan. It's great to get data, which is hard to get. And
I
not
love
much
data.
Yeah, I like data too. So just a couple questions. What was the percentage turnout, do you think? Do you know
that?
About
65%.
Okay.
It was low-ish.
Well, that's pretty high compared to some things, but anyway.
It was low for the state. Mark Lindemann did a quick statistical analysis that suggested somewhere between 4,500 and 5,000 voters might not have voted because of the long lines. And again, he does political science, so he knows the justification for that statement, but that was his estimate.
Right, just to give a couple of comparisons is, the number of late voters is not necessarily the whole story. For example, in 2008, when I was a poll worker in Baltimore City, we had 2-hour lines in the morning, and then, you know, everybody came in the morning, and then nobody came late, so there were nobody late. So, you know, that can happen too. It's distributions are kind of unpredictable. And Maryland, we more or less did have the specified number is 200 voters, 200 registered voters per machine. So if you have 75% turnout, then that would be 150 voters per machine, which is a lot lower than that. But nevertheless, in the last election, when we had early voting and everything was supposed to be fixed according to the State Board of Elections, we had long lines everywhere. We had long lines in early voting. We had long lines in regular voting. So it's a complete train wreck. So as you know, we said in our paper, we think at least by comparison, the only you need a lot of voting stations, and the cheapest way to do that is paper ballots, because then you have vote marking stations. So I would also urge the people who are doing the STAR system to think about this and to get the look at our numbers and get the right number of stations. And that worries me when they're saying that each voting station is going to be $1,000 or something like that. But anyway, this is something to worry about. Long lines are completely unacceptable, I think, for real democracy, because as you pointed out, there's another paper that said by the guy from Ohio State said 200,000 people didn't vote in Florida, were disenfranchised, and some number that you said Mark Lindemann said. So we can't have this. We have to have not long lines.
Yeah, in answer to your first question about the distribution, if you look at the histograms of terminals collecting votes, there are a few precincts where there clearly was a dip in the, say, 3 to 5 p.m. period, which is the lull. Almost everywhere else, the vote collection per 15-minute period was flat, and I think that's because we were so far below the threshold of what was necessary that there wasn't any beginning queue, drain the queue, and then steady state. I mean, our steady state was disaster from the get-go. But I think if you get close to that threshold, then you can really start worrying about the distribution of voters over time during the day.
Thank you. That was a very interesting talk. How do we fix this then? Like, what exactly are the changes? Is it something where, you said South Carolina has a completely uniform statewide system. I mean, and you also said that the county had refused to buy new machines, or they'd refused to even acquire machines from other counties.
They have refused to spend any more money for any more machines. They also, the first time around, they refused to pay Steve Hamm his bill. We have this bizarre situation where the legislative delegation appoints the commission.
Mm-hmm.
The county pays for it, but has no control over who's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this back and forth over who, taxation without representation, which is an old American tradition.
So is there any way to take, because, you looked at several factors here, the complexity of the ballot, the number of voters that were there, the number of DREs, some sense of failure rate. Is there any way to take all of this data and try and make it predictive in some way to say, okay, if we have this kind of ballot and if we have this kind of projected turnout, then the safest distribution of equipment will be this?
My suspicion would be that, and I don't see Walter, but somebody who does this kind of statistics, you could look, for example, since you have all of South Carolina's data and you have the time to vote, you could look at ballot styles and number of choices on the ballot and do a serious statistical analysis of how long it took people to vote based and compare that against the number of ballot choices they had. That would argue, because apparently what I was told in Miami is that the reason Miami had long lines is that it took 2 seconds per page to scan and they had a 12-page ballot in some places. So they were kind of dead in the water because, 30 seconds just to scan in one ballot. So one could look, for example, at the time to vote for the entire state and compare that with ballot complexity or number of choices. That would probably be one place to start. Certainly, the fact that just slight changes. I mean, I have argued that we should not have really, really tiny precincts. Greenville has almost no tiny precincts, and if you think about it, the queuing theory says that the smaller the precinct and the smaller the number of machines, the bigger the effect from having not enough.
Right.
So there's going to be an optimal target size for a precinct. You don't want it too big because then you're going to have logistics issues of the venue, but you want it big enough so that you have minimized at least this mathematical glitch in the way, three machines versus two machines is a big difference, and you have to overcompensate. So if you have 120 small precincts, you have to overcompensate with 120 machines. If you have 60 medium-sized precincts, you have to round up only 60 times. So I think there is a benefit there. Again, that's a policy issue. But that's one of the policy issues that I think can be looked at by looking at this kind of analysis.
Thank you.
There's time for one more question. I thank you for your talk. I think it's knowing the limitations of the Ivotronic, I think your findings are incredible based on the data that the audit, their audits show. My question is, do the county or state election officials have identity used to review their poll worker training material? Because if they're not buying more machines, they can make their procedures more efficient.
They do actually believe me now, yes. they didn't for a long time. On the other hand, I put my name in for the vacant sixth seat on the election commission, and although I got a majority of the delegation's vote, I did not get a majority of the weighted vote by one delegate. I needed one more delegate, and I got all the Republican votes, I got half of the African American votes, but I didn't get the right votes. But no, they are listening, yes, and it was such a huge disaster that people are actually listening this time. I mean, it's still, there's ongoing discussion as to how to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Thank you.
So that leads to the next obvious question. So what are the most likely forward steps that they'll take to mitigate these problems?
Oh, one of the comments I made is that no field general would ever keep his or her commission if they failed to notice that a third of the Army was not getting ready for battle tomorrow. We had a third of our voting machines in the warehouse the day before Election Day. Somebody should have noticed that. So they are going to make sure they deploy all the machines. They are going to make sure that they get fixed, so we have all the ones in operation. They claim they're going to do better at poll worker training, because where I voted, I was 90 minutes in line to sign in, and then I counted 100 people ahead of me who had already signed in who were waiting for a machine. There's another issue. It's not just the sign-in process. I mean, it was the place where I was a poll watcher. The venue was set up so that they couldn't let 100 people sign in, so they had to stop people at the sign-in process. This kind of poll worker training on how to manage physical lines. This is why the guy from Disney is on the Federal Commission, right? They know how to manage lines of people. And this is a logistics issue. And also, if it's that delicate, you know, 8 or 10 seconds difference between doing well and you know, having things not work, you've got to make sure the poll workers are really right there with the PEBs to open up the devices as quickly as possible, because that 4 or 5 seconds for every voter all day long will make a difference in the queues. And we had complaints of not enough PEBs, and the poll workers were slow at going back and forth. And I saw some of this. The place where I was a poll watcher and my own precinct were almost exactly the same size, 2,200 voters, roughly 1,200 votes cast. 8 machines each in 2010, 6 machines in 2012, and 2 of them broke. My 5 hours in Lincolnshire precinct, I saw 4, maybe 5 white faces, and I know exactly how long it took for people to be in line, because when the white guy with the red baseball cap showed up at the back of the line, I could track him without any effort whatsoever, because everybody else in the room was black. My own precinct, I saw maybe 4 black faces in 2.5 hours in line. So the demographics were identical, except for the logistics were identical, the demographics were opposite. This was not intentional. We have to train the poll workers better. And that's why I say we need to send them up to Greenville to talk to Belangia, because clearly he knows how to run an election better. Because they managed to get more votes through with no real complications. And I think they're listening, yes. I think they have come to the realization that this does matter.
All right, well, let's everybody thank the speaker very much.